Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green at SaverLife.com, and it is Monarch Week, at least in my yard. Monarchs have been laying eggs pretty much every day all week long, and I go out and find the eggs. I was able to watch them lay some of them, so I knew which milkweed plants to go look for. But I live on a city property, so there's not that much space. But there are a lot of milkweed plants, and you can tell that because I cut about 100 stems so far, and there's still plenty of milkweed out in my yard. You might think it was only milkweed, but some of them are small, mixed in with other things, and I think if you looked at my yard, you might not even notice the milkweed, or not very much of it. Some of it's growing in the shade, and so it doesn't get as big, doesn't flower, but the caterpillars don't care. They still lay their eggs on it, and I'm not sure what the caterpillar does when it eats the entire plant, because they can eat a lot of milkweed as they get bigger. I guess they just go in search of another plant nearby. But they seem to lay eggs on some very, very, very small milkweed plants, and so it's a bit of a challenge to find these eggs. I was talking to a couple people about it this week. It looks like it's just one egg, usually, per plant. And it's always, almost always, under the leaf. A few times I found them on top of the leaf. Occasionally, it's effectively more visible because it's on the very new leaves that are so small and still pointed upwards that you can see the egg without bending the plant over. But usually what I do is I bend the plant over, not so far as to break it, but just so far that I can see the underneath of many of the leaves. The monarchs don't seem to lay eggs on the older leaves further down. So it usually seems like the middle of the plant to the top, and usually near the top, is where the eggs can be found. And so I'm sure I have neighbors who don't know what I'm doing and can't figure out why I'm bending these plants over in my yard and then snipping them off occasionally. And because these eggs are really not very obvious, when I find a egg on a plant, I'll actually cut the end of the leaf with the scissors so that I know which leaf the egg is on, and can be a little more careful with that. And then now, there are some people who take the leaves off and then raise the caterpillars from the leaf, which you've got to put in on a wet paper towel or something, because the leaf is just going to shrivel up if you don't. And so I prefer to cut the stem, which will regrow, and I cut it long enough stem that I can put it in my little mason jar vase. I've got lots of these. They're kind of a middle-sized mason jar, not the smallest one, not the really huge one. And I cut some of the lower leaves off so it'll fit in this vase. And then I put, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 stems of milkweed in each one of these mason jar vases. And then occasionally find a spider nearby or on the milkweed. So I make sure to leave those outside, because that's who's eating the baby caterpillars. I was out of town for a little while, and when I came back last week, I could see that eggs had been laid from monarchs, and the little caterpillars had hatched. They eat a hole in the leaf somewhere, not on the edge of the leaf, but somewhere toward the center, but sort of inside the leaf. And then the spiders eat them. Now this time I found about 100 eggs. I did find 2 caterpillars, one kind of medium size, so one of only 2 I've ever found in my yard in 10 years of looking for these, and one pretty small caterpillar, but again bigger than I usually find. And then these eggs must be hatching very quickly, because within a couple of days, they are tiny caterpillars on the milkweed in my mason jar vases. And so to keep the counter from being cluttered by mason jar vases, and to keep the spiders that are indoors away from these monarch caterpillars, I take four or five of these mason jars and put them in a big plastic bin with, I use vinyl window screening as the cover to that, and use a little green ties. It's kind of like a, I don't know, forget what size you buy them, 60-yard green twistum that you cut off at whatever length so you can tie up your tomatoes and your dahlias and other plants, and I use one long length of that to keep the window screening in place, and then it's pretty easy to take off. They need the air. You can't just put the plastic top on the bin, and I use a clear bin so there's more light. And that's worked pretty well the last 3-4 years. If any of you would like a monarch egg or caterpillar, I can make arrangements for you to pick it up. Or if I happen to be near wherever you are, I can drop it off nearby for you perhaps. But I have plenty. I would love nothing more than for 50 people to say, I'd love a monarch egg or two, and come pick them up. So again, we can make those arrangements. There's no charge. If you want to raise a monarch, it is pretty easy. The best way to do it is, given you're probably not going to have 50 or 100 of them, is in a pretzel container, big plastic pretzel containers. Snyder's, and there's a couple brands that make these. I've actually contacted a couple of the brands trying to get them to give me, they must have some containers that get the labels put on wrong, or, something goes wrong, but the container itself is fine. I haven't had any success yet, but there's only so many pretzels I can eat, and I used to work at the city of Rochester, and I would give the pretzels to the rec centers, which they loved, and then I'd have these empty containers for the milk for the caterpillars. So initially, when I was raising monarch caterpillars, I would put water in the bottom of this pretzel container, window screening on top, held in place by a rubber band, but that was too much water. It got too humid in there. And when the caterpillars, their excrement drops in, it turns green and disgusting. So I came up with this idea of using little small plastic water bottles, one-third size or whatever of a traditional water bottle. And they have a small opening, but it's like a little vase. And I put some double stick tape so that it stays in place on the bottom of this pretzel container, and these milkweed stems have a vase. And you will need to add more milkweed. So initially, a stem of milkweed will have one egg on it. Might have two, but usually just one. And maybe you put two of those stems in your pretzel container. Well, those two caterpillars, it'll take them a while. It'll take them a week or 10 days or so, but they'll eat every single bit of that milkweed and start eating the stem. So you're going to need to add a couple stems of milkweed, which means you need to figure out a place to get them. Not at the farmer's market, not at the grocery store, some field nearby, or a friend who maybe has some milkweed. And then be careful, because you might cut a stem of milkweed that has an egg on it. And if those hungry caterpillars that are quite large in your bin, they'll just, I guess they eat the egg. They just eat the whole leaf, and I'm not sure what they do with the egg, but they'll destroy it, knock it off, whatever. But you've got to look to make sure there are no eggs on the milkweed that you're feeding them. So it's fun. It's fascinating to see the way the monarchs change and to release them about a month from now. These monarchs are probably the third generation. The eggs that I have now, and I think I'm pretty sure they are. And then the fourth generation. So the eggs that I have now will turn into caterpillars, fly around, and lay eggs a month from now. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is the fourth generation. There are four generations. It's just hard to figure out which one you might have. I think it takes about a month for them to mature. They're going to leave to fly south in mid-September. So likely this is the third generation, and the fourth one will, those eggs will hatch in maybe mid-late August, and they'll mature, and they will fly south in mid to late September. The first two generations generally happened further south because they were moving up from the overwintering in Mexico. They leave there in February, March, and have lay eggs and move north over several months, and start showing up here around May, June. Multiple generations, but only one will survive to fly south. The first three generations only live 6-7 weeks. And the fourth generation somehow is different, and it lives all winter long, and then and makes that long flight to Mexico. It's a couple thousand miles, depending on where they're leaving from. And the monarchs east of the Rockies, which is a big swath of the country and includes Canada, those monarchs fly to a specific forest in Mexico. The ones that are west of the Rockies fly down to a couple spots in California. Santa Cruz is one, and some others further south. So, again, it's a fascinating story, and you can kind of get a window into it by raising your own monarchs. So if you are interested in a monarch egg or a small caterpillar, email me, michael@saferlife.com, and we'll figure out a way to get one or two. Or three, or maybe you have friends who would like some too, or maybe you have kids or grandkids that are part of a neighborhood group. I'm finding more every day, so there's no shortage of them. If 200 people contact me, I'll just put people on a waiting list, and as soon as I find them, I'll make the arrangements for you to get some. But I only have a couple of these pretzel containers, so start eating pretzels now. Of course, you can just take them out and put them in Ziploc bags and eat them while you're watching the caterpillar munching on the milkweed. But again, if you have questions about it or just wondering, how involved it might be, send me a note, michael@saverlife.com. It's really pretty simple, other than adding milkweed when you notice there aren't many leaves left. That's about all you have to do. And then keeping an eye on it for when the chrysalis appears and then when it emerges, which might be a week to 10 days after that chrysalis appears. And that chrysalis is such a work of art. And most people don't get to see them up close. If you go to look for them outside, you almost never find them. Only if you just by chance get lucky, and the chrysalis usually is not in the milkweed. It's the caterpillar usually goes somewhere else to make the chrysalis, which makes it... That's why you just won't find the chrysalis on the milkweed, because they don't make them on the milkweed. But when they're in this pretzel container... sometimes they do, or they'll attach it to the screening up on top of the pretzel container, or maybe sometimes the sides, the plastic sides of the pretzel container. But seeing this chrysalis up close, the color is a fascinating green. It's really, it's almost indescribable green. It's not a lime green. It's lighter in color than that. But it's such a rich color. And then there's these gold decorations that are on the chrysalis. And it would take an artist quite a while to put these gold markings on with this kind of precision. And how does that happen? Why are these gold decorations on the chrysalis? It really is fascinating to see them so close. And this is really the only way you're going to do that. The Strong Museum of Play, their butterfly garden, probably has some chrysalis. I'm not sure how close you can get to them. They have, they raise many kinds of butterflies there. But the monarch's chrysalis is one of the most beautiful that you'll see. Most of the times, moths and butterflies, their chrysalis is made to look like a dead leaf or something like that, because they often overwinter as a chrysalis and they want to blend in with the other dead leaves. But the monarch, it seems to know it's toxic to birds and that they generally won't bother it, and so it just, puts the glitter on and the gold and this gorgeous green and tells people what it is. It's fun to see up close. Also, on a non-monarch theme for a moment, it is the final Sunday tomorrow of Charlie and Judy Zedek's, their daily International Daylily Display Garden, Open Garden. They've had open gardens all month, and yesterday I stopped there to get some photos, posted them on Instagram under Savor Life MWT, and you can see some of the daylilies, tons of them in bloom right now. And again, it is the final Sunday that they're doing it, 2 to 6 p.m. tomorrow. They will not have refreshments as they usually do because of the pandemic. And they ask that you wear a mask or facial covering. Even though it's outside, their garden is fairly, it's pretty small, given there's 200 or 300 daylilies, different varieties of daylilies in their gardens. So they want you to wear a mask and protect other people that way, even though it is outside. But bring some water, because it's going to be hot tomorrow, and they some people stay for a couple minutes, some people stay for a while and ask questions or take photos of all these different daylilies. Again, bring some water, because it is going to be an even hotter day tomorrow than today. They're at 1 Hillside Avenue, and this is free, by the way, no charge. No daylilies are for sale either. If there's one that you've fallen in love with, he can put your name in a book, and if when they divide them in the fall, they have extras, he sells them at that point. But there are no pots of daylilies to purchase or anything. It's just a chance to see the gardens. And they're between School Number 1 and the Water Authority on Hillside Avenue, which is very close to Washington Grove. Basically, right up the hill there, Washington Grove is adjacent, you could almost say around the reservoir. One entrance is on Nunde Boulevard off of Winton. Tay House, which is one of the City of Rochester's lodges, is on the same road as the number 1 Hillside Avenue. It's it's a dead end street that goes up to the Water Authority and to Tay House. And so come and explore Daylilies and Washington Grove, one of the only old growth forests that's left in and near the city. Some really amazing trees in there, and especially on a hot day, you know, lots of shade. The upper canopy kind of allows a little bit of air movement because it's shaded out a lot of the undergrowth. So it's really a stunning place to explore, and very close to Charlie and Judy Zedek's Daylily Display Garden. Hope you get a chance to get over there tomorrow, 2 to 6. Again, no charge, no reservations. No, you just show up. You can park in the parking lot for school number one and just walk across that little access road that goes up to the Water Authority and Tay House to their gardens. And there are some other flowers in there. They have some huge Asiatic Oriental lilies. There's a bunch of perennials in various areas, some of them mixed in, but mainly in some separate gardens. They also have some of their daylilies with tags on them and names, and these are like a paper, must be some sort of plastic, like a mailing label, to mark the daylilies that they've crossed with others in their gardens. So they're breeding some of their own daylilies, have some of their own varieties, and they tend to focus on some of the miniature ones. So when you see those little tags on the plant, usually they're right below the bud or the seed head, actually. I didn't see any examples when I was stopped by yesterday. And I was just there to take some photos. You can't just stop by like that, by the way. It's it's their private garden. But I let them know I was coming to take some photos to post to Instagram. And the if you next year maybe go several times during the season, you'll see even more daylilies, some of the early, mid, and these are more tending toward the later season. Sometimes they have these open gardens in August, but this year just in July. So tomorrow is the final one for the Daylily Display Garden. And if you want details on any of this or questions, email me, michael@saverlife.com. Had a yellow swallowtail visit my coneflowers, my purple coneflowers this week. And I've seen this yellow swallowtail before. Someone took a video of it. It's not the same swallowtail, but the same variety of species of swallowtail. And this one flutters its wings very quickly while it's feeding on the, and you can see it putting its proboscis down into the flower head. It lets you get, or this one let me get fairly close, but not close enough to get a good video of this fluttering of the wings, which is really kind of fascinating. It's almost like nervousness, and maybe it's, so it can fly away quickly, but it's, most butterflies don't do that. So kind of intriguing to run into. Plants, flowers. Michael@saverlife.com. See some of your photos of favorite plants that are important. The cicadas that are in the trees and the Rose of Sharon blooming tell me that it is midsummer. And some 87 or 89 degree weather this weekend, that will just make me even more certain that it is midsummer. But I love the sound of the cicadas. I was reading about some wasps and hornets. and they describe this cicada killer wasp, which is a large wasp that will, and maybe this is sort of gross if you're having breakfast, and my apologies, I won't too much detail, but wasps and bees and things are so different from each other, and this wasp lives alone. It's not one that, it's not like yellow jackets that are in vast numbers, but it will, it goes up and captures a cicada and paralyzes it, and then carries it to the ground. If you've seen a cicada, which have big wings and a decent sized body, it's you can imagine it's a fairly large wasp that can carry this to the ground, and then it basically buries the cicada still alive in the ground with a couple of eggs. And I think this is the one where they lay the number of eggs depending on whether, or they put the number of cicadas with their eggs depending on whether it's a male or female, which is weird, because how does it know whether it's a male or female egg? But from the research they've done, it seems like they'll put more cicadas, like maybe three or four cicadas for the female egg and two or three cicadas for the male egg, something like that. But really kind of fascinating things. And again, they've paralyzed this cicada, and so the eggs that they lay will be able to, I mean, they basically preserves a cicada for the eggs to consume. Crazy, crazy stuff. And I don't know, something about all that I find fascinating, the way these mechanisms Mother Nature creates or evolves to you know, in the different niches that these, in this case, insects or wasps or plants and trees, etc. That really is just fascinating. And one other thing, I was someone sent me some photos of a beach and some of the kind of where the water was eroding the sand a little bit, and it looked just like the roots of a tree. And someone else posted a photo of the trees as you look up, say you're lying on the ground looking up into the tree canopy at Washington Grove maybe, and how the trees fill that space in a way with branches and leaves. In this case, it was a winter photo, so it was just branches, but it fills that space almost like the, you know, the way the blood moves through our body in the ever smaller veins, and just gave me a sense that in some ways, how connected we are in nature, and how some of these same themes appear in so many different places, and the way these roots grow out, and the way the sand was being eroded by the water looked very, very similar. It's I guess just fascinating as you notice these things. It is pick your own season for a number of fruits, and we'll talk about them in Fort Love of Food this morning. Places like Herd Orchards have some amazing blueberries right now. Cherry season is at its peak, and we've got to stock up on all these fruit while we can. So again, Fort Love of Food to follow, discover the Finger Lakes, and then tomorrow it's the Grapevine at 9 a.m. here at SavorLife.com. Have a great day. Mm-hmm.